Well, exciting to be here today, yeah? What a morning. And slightly conscious of the time, so we're going to crack along. So, we've got a couple of series going on at the moment. One is our regular one, and one is a slow burner, which I'm sort of overseeing a bit. So I'm a counsellor, so I have a sort of psychology as part of my job. And I've been a lot interested in this idea of attachment, which I talked about last time. So attachment is brought up by this guy called John Bowlby in, the 50s, I think. And it's about the relationship of us with our significant other people in our lives. And at that point, I don't know if you remember last time I talked about, one thing he discovered early on was that animals, when they need shelter and safety, they run to a structure, mostly. But humans, we run to our significant people. We run to our important people. And the idea behind that, he kind of established, was that we look for a safe place and a secure base. And they're the things that grow us as people, and they're the things that sustain us as people. And so last time I talked about Moses, and especially from Psalm 91 and the introduction to that of being he who dwells in the shelter, rests in the shadow. He who dwells in the shelter of, I'm missing a few words there, but he who dwells in the shadow of God, rests in the shadow of God. And that's the place of growth and of safety. And so the idea there, and then there's this other guy that I'm basing this whole series on, is this guy called Gordon Neufeld, who's a Canadian psychologist, who's a developmental psychologist. So he has these six stages of that a child goes through as they develop with their mostly their mother, but with their parents. So the first one is proximity. That's what I talked about last time, which is about just bringing this into a God frame, about coming into the safe place and the secure base, about being in proximity, about the senses. It's all about receiving from God, about being close enough to hear his voice, to feel his presence. Marty talked the other week about smelling his fragrance. So being in a place where, and we heard it this morning, Rose, lovely testimony, hearing his voice, being close enough, being in the proximity of God, hanging around, getting in close, tucking in nice and close, you know, like little children do. They just like into the leg, and then they look up and realize it's not the right leg. Yeah, they tuck in, they come in close, they get in proximity, they notice, they look, they observe, they wait for the eyes, they're looking for the look, they're waiting for the voice, they're wanting to hear, they're wanting to see, they're wanting to recognize that their person, their significant person, their parent, their one that loves them, is inputting, is noticing. And so that was the where we went last time. The second we're going to do numbers 2 and 3 of this hierarchy, and the next ones are sameness and belonging. So the other three are significance, love, and being known. So today we're going to look at sameness and belonging. So if you can just hold that first stage is really important, and I think especially for us as followers of Jesus like I say, we come like children, don't we? I mean, all these examples this morning I feel are really like coming like children to our Father. We come with our problems, we come with the things that we're proud about. We come when we need to, when we need to hear the voice, when we need to see the face, when we need to see that, I love you, I accept you, that's great, that's awesome, or oh, really, the cat's just scratched you, I'll give it a little kiss. So we need all those things. So I was dwelling on these other two things over the last couple of weeks. So the kind of the overall flavour of this thing is about identity. I think a lot about identity and about how people gain identity, and I've come to a lot of the conclusion that the world says that we look inside, and if we just you know, dig hard enough inside us, we find out who we are. And the more I think about it, the more I look into it, I feel like that's some of it, maybe. But a large portion of it is how we're seen by other people. And of course, as followers of Jesus, the most important part is how we're seen by him. And I guess that's why this attachment stuff really resonates with me, is that a lot of identity is formed in these early years in face-to-face contact with someone else. And as we go, we form attachments with other people, and they're the people that sort of shape who we are. The way we see ourselves, you know, identity is the way we see ourselves, but it's also the way that they see us, and it's also the way that the Lord sees us. Anyway, so today we're going to go into, I was going to skip a bit because I'm weary of time. So sameness. Sameness is about imitation. So you'll recognise that if I flip the page that I'll get the next bit I'm up to. Yeah, sameness is about imitation. I don't know, children of the 80s. Any children of the 80s here or 70s? Yeah, got a few. I thought so. Do you remember that ad? I want to be like Mike. Do you remember that? Gatorade. I had to look up to see whether Gatorade still existed. It does exist still. Anyway, this is there was this ad in the 80s. I want to be like, 80s, maybe early 90s. I want to be like Mike. And it was about Michael Jordan, who's, you know, for those who don't know, probably all of you know, famous basketball player from way back. Ironically, I don't think I ever, apart from this ad, I don't think I ever heard him being named as Mike. He was always Michael. Anyway, the ad, I want to be like Mike. And it had Michael Jordan like basketballing around with all these little kids trying to mimic his moves. And again, slightly ironically, the main moves that he was known for was like flying through the air and slam dunking, and none of these kids were doing that. Anyway, so he's doing all these moves, and they're imitating him. And maybe again from the 80s, the thing's probably more closer to me and more closer to my culture, where I love cricket. And I hear amen from the front row. And in the 80s, New Zealand had two great players, Hadley and Crowe. And Hadley would start his run-up with a little jink off the same foot, and then he'd have the ball kind of tucked in here, and then I don't know how he'd do it, but he'd run in a certain way. And Crowe, when he was batting, he'd always have his collar up, and he'd have this kind of way of kind of just shimmying around in the crease while he's trying to bat, and have a certain stance, which is probably just what he did, right? It's just probably who he was. But you know, as kids, out on the playground, everyone's in there with a starting out, running up, and everyone's sort of like strutting around with their bat, collars up. And then even going on from that, there's this another guy called Brendan McCullum, who was kind of the next generation. And if you see early footage of him, he's got his collar up. He's got the same stance. He does the same stuff as he's scratching around waiting for the ball to come in. Imitation is such a natural part of who we are, right? We look to the significant people, the heroes, the big people in our lives, and we try and copy what they do. And you know this from their family as well, right? Or for those of you who've got kids, and probably you've observed it if you don't have kids, that as your kids are little, they start doing cute stuff. That's stuff that you do. You're like, oh, yeah, that's kind of cute. And then they do not cute stuff, which is also stuff that you do. And you're like, Do I say that like that? Yeah. So we know this. We know that imitation is such a big part of who we are. And you know, I don't think it stops as children, but we obviously notice it a lot more, and it's a lot clearer as when people are kids. And so, you know, there was a WWJD campaign. I want to be like Jesus, the imitation of Jesus. It's kind of what we're about, right? Is imitating the Lord, and that's a clear part of our identity formation, is imitating Jesus. And there's two dimensions to this. The Old Testament talks a lot about, you know, God came in when the people of Israel came out of slavery and went into the promised land. God was really careful to put into warnings. Don't imitate the people that you're going into the lands of. Don't do. I love this phrase, and from 2 Kings 17:14, it says that they imitated the nations around them, although the Lord had told them, do not do as they do. I love that little phrase, do not do as they do. So the Lord had come in, and he'd said, before they'd gone, and he'd said, watch out. There's the people there, and I don't want you living like how they're living. I don't want you to live like they live, because you're following me, you're not following them. And I think, I think that's a pretty common message for us, is to look out. And I probably don't really want to major on that, of being weary, but you know, it's something to notice. As followers, we're followers of one way or another way, and we do soak in the culture, right? We're sitting in the culture, and I think sometimes it's the subtleties of the culture that are the ones that, for me when I'm about to lose reputation, I know that I'm erring towards culture. And imitating culture. And I think we're, I don't know, it might just be me, but it feels like we're heading into a season, and we've been heading into a season where there's a starker divide between us as a people of God and the culture around us. And the difficult part is walking that line. So for me, walking that line of being okay with not losing face. Because for me, that's what a lot of it's going to be about. Difficult conversations. Yep. Am I going to go soft on what I believe? Or am I going to potentially lose face with the people who are important around me? And I'm sure that's what happened to the people of Israel as well, right? They moved in, they were around other people. Losing face, subtle things like that. Trying to fit in, and they did what? They imitated the people around them. Do not do as they do. So I think it's more than, I mean, often we go to like sex, drugs, and rock and roll for this, don't we? You know, don't do the drugs, don't sleep with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your whoever. Or whatever, but I think it's a lot more subtle than that, and it's you know what I've just said. So the other part that I'm probably a little bit more excited about, a little bit more amped about, is imitation on those of us around us. Paul says in Corinthians, imitate me. If you think about it, it's a pretty strange thing to say, right? Imitate me. Well, I can get up here and say, imitate Jesus, and everyone, yeah. Well, that's good stuff. Good word right there. But if I stood up here and said, imitate me, Yeah, yeah. But Paul says that. He says, imitate me. I don't know, it feels, we don't really have this word, but, you know, the Australians say, oh, it's a bit un-Australian. It's a bit un-Australian. it feels a bit un-New Zealand, actually, to say, imitate me. So Paul says that. I urge you to imitate me. I urge you to imitate me. I don't know, it just doesn't seem okay. I mean, it kind of seems okay to imitate Michael Jordan, be like Mike, yeah, he's famous, he's a big guy. And kind of maybe it kind of seems okay for Paul to say that too. I mean, he's kind of like the Michael Jordan of our faith, right? You know? Bit of air, Paul. he's the big man of the faith. Maybe it is okay for him to say, as a superstar, to say, imitate him. But then he says, so in this passage, he talks about imitating me, and then he says, so for you to be able to do that, I'm sending you Timothy. I'm sending you my son Timothy. So Paul's way of him getting the Corinthians to imitate his way of life is to send this young guy, who'd been in the faith a lot less and was a lot younger in years. I don't know exactly how many. I think maybe late 20s by the time he went to the Corinthians. Imitate me. Imitate me. Here's Timothy. So obviously they weren't directly imitating the superstar. They were imitating Timothy. And he says, here is Timothy, my son. Here's Timothy, my son. I'm sending you Timothy, my son, so that you can imitate me. And in another passage, he talks about imitate me because I imitate Jesus. And I reckon then they probably, sometimes I think, you know, we humanity has gone through these phases of like, they kind of know stuff and then lose the knowledge, and then science comes along and says, oh yeah, we've just discovered such and such. So I reckon they kind of probably knew these ideas of attachment back then, that someone's just written about them now, later in the 20th century. And so saying, I'm sending you my son, Timothy, imitate him because then you'll be imitating me, was probably a really logical idea for that era. Because people knew then that if you wanted to be like the Father, you imitate the Son. Because the Son's been sitting in the Father's pocket. The Son's been hanging around with the Father. The Son's been imitating the Father so much that they become like the Father so much, or like the Mother so much, that you can just look at the Son and know that it's the image of the Father. Imitate me. I'm sending you Timothy. And I think there's a nice bit here for us about, originally when I wrote this, I was thinking about mature Christians, but I think a lot of us are mature Christians. And, you know, I look at Rosemary and Graham and an inspiration, still going at this stage of life, still going hard, still going strong at this stage of life. Imitate them. Imitate James. Imitate Rose. Yeah. All these people who have been followers and imitators of the people who have been sowing into them, but more importantly, the imitators of Jesus. We've all got something that's worth imitating. We've all got something that's from the Lord that's worth imitating, yeah? Imitate me. It's a nice idea, and Jesus does this as well. It's kind of really similar to the Timothy idea. Jesus does this as well when I always end up in this passage of scripture in my Father's house, many rooms, and Philip says, "Show us the Father. That'll be enough. That'll be enough for us." And Jesus says, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." I'm the Son. If you've seen the Son, you've seen the Father. You don't need to see the Father. You've seen the Son. So, imitate me. That's point number one, belonging. Point number two, belonging is about ownership, partly. Belonging is about, about ownership. You are my God. This is where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be with you. And there's something, I think there's something powerful when the child grows up. So when my first daughter was born, Eve, she was my daughter, she was our daughter. And there's something powerful, really powerful, I reckon, about the point where she goes, you're my dad. You're my mum. She belonged to us. She still belongs to us. From the beginning, she belonged to us. But at some point, we belonged to her as well. Nice thought, eh? And it's the same with God. I imagine that, I don't know because I'm not in the situation, but I imagine for people who are adopted or people who have step parents, that this is probably a really huge thing. The point where they go, oh, yep, you're my dad, you're my mum. You're not biologically mine, but at this point, I'm going to side with you. I'm with you. You're with me. And I think that's probably more kind of akin to us as children of God, because we, at some point, we register. Well, maybe not, but anyway. When we go, you're my God, you're my God. Hebrews 11 says that Moses chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than enjoying the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as greater than the value of the treasure of Egypt, because he was looking forward to his reward. It's been a theme for believers right down the ages, right? Being able to say, you're my God, and I'm going to keep you as my God, even though that's going to be damaging for me, even though at this moment that's going to be dangerous or damaging for me. And growing up, I remember that I didn't always want to be associated with my sister, with my sister Jane. She was my older sister. And especially in my teen years, I know there was times when I wanted to be walking on the other side of the street because I thought she was damaging my street cred. Don't think I ever had any street cred, but whatever I had, I thought she was damaging it if she was going to be seen close to me. And, you know, there's people you don't want to be walking next to, right? You don't want to be other people seeing that they're your people. Because if she had walked next to me, that would have been akin to saying, you're my people. We're each other's people. And people see that, right? And people see that we belong together. What does that mean if we belong together, if we're seen together? My God. Just as an aside, I started during the week, I started praying like this. And it was like, oh, wow, this is something different. Like praying out of affection and out of belonging. My Jesus. My Jesus. Just feels different. It's a different place. Anyway. Play with it. anyway, so I know this sometimes it's like this with the Lord for me, and maybe with you guys as well. And even with my sister, I don't think I ever wanted to completely disown her, but it was quite nice with her having her just over the road, walking on the other side of the road. And I feel like sometimes it's like this with the Lord, right? That sometimes it's easier feels easier. We don't want to. We're not like really just to ditch our face, but sometimes we just want to just quietly cross over to the other side of the road, just so we don't get seen as belonging. And then when it's convenient, we'll cross back over and we'll belong together. So I guess a couple of sort of flip side around ideas this morning, imitation of other in the community of God. So it kind of feels like it should have been the other way around. Belonging should have been about us and imitation should have been about Jesus. But I flipped it over today and imitation's about us and belonging's about tucking in close to God. And the idea that of Moses, like of walking alongside of Jesus, of God being still my God through the rough times. It's a kind of old-fashioned message, right? Through the rough times, through the good times, staying on the same side of the road, not crossing over when people start looking at us and attaching our identity to that of Jesus and what that might mean and what that might mean in their heads and what that might mean in our heads as well. And the potential, I guess a little bit of potential shame about that. Anyway, so my God is the belonging part. My God. The two ideas, identity from imitation. Everyone here has followed Jesus, has a part of his character, mimicking his character in some way, and it's worth us mimicking that and other people as well. And then coming in close, tucking in again, claiming Jesus again as my God, as our belonging place. Okay, thank you.